Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories I'll be looking into on today's program. Pope Benedict speaks about the annual Week of Prayer for Christian Unity at his Wednesday General Audience. With more and more Iraqis, especially Christians, fleeing the worsening violence in their homeland, we take a look at the present situation there and ask whether the country's tiny Christian community risks extinction. As an international delegation of bishops continue their visit to the Holy Land, we find out from Philippa Hitchin, who is travelling with them, more about the divisions and mistrust between the different communities. At his weekly general audience, Pope Benedict focused on the annual Week of Prayer for Christian Unity that begins on January the 18th. Charles Collins has this report.
Pope Benedict greeted over 6,000 people in the Pope Paul VI Audience Hall on Wednesday during his weekly general audience. The Holy Father took a break from his ongoing catechesis about early figures in the Church to speak about the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity.
Since unity which our Lord wills for all his disciples is ultimately God's gift, I encourage everyone to join fervently in imploring this great grace. The closer we draw to Christ, and the more we are converted by his trust and love, the closer we will draw to one another. In many countries, a week of prayer for Christian unity is also preceded by a day of reflection between Christians and Jews in order to build greater respect, friendship, and cooperation between our two communities.
The Holy Father also spoke about this year's theme for the week, which is taken from the Gospel of Mark.
The theme of this year's Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, he even makes the deaf to hear and the dumb to speak, is inspired by St. Mark's account of Jesus healing a man who was deaf and mute. Through baptism, all Christians have been freed from spiritual deafness, enabled to hear God's word, and charged to bear witness to it in word and deed by the access of Christian charity. May our common prayers and our efforts to live fully the grace of our baptism hasten the day when all Christ's followers will live in perfect communion.
After his catechesis, the Holy Father made a special greeting in Croatian. He was welcoming a special delegation from the Croatian government, including the Prime Minister Ivo Sanader. After the audience, the Holy Father met with the Prime Minister privately. The Holy Father also extended his apostolic blessing on those in the audience hall, which we share with you now. I'm Charles Collins.
Sit nomen Domini benedictum.
Ex hoc nunc et usque in seculo.
Adiutorium nostrum in nomine Domini,
qui fecit celum et terra.
Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
The national delegation of Catholic bishops currently visiting the Holy Land met the Israeli Deputy Prime Minister Shimon Peres on Wednesday and later were due to meet Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The group of bishops from Europe and North America are on a six-day visit to the Holy Land to help show solidarity and support for the churches and community in Israel and the Palestinian territories. The bishop's visit comes at a time of heightened tensions between President Abbas's Fatah faction and the rival Hamas-led government. More than 30 people have been killed in fighting between Hamas and Fatah supporters in Gaza in recent weeks. The tensions between the two rival Palestinian factions prompted a group of Christian leaders in Jerusalem to issue an appeal calling for calm and unity. The church leaders said the recent clashes and aggressive language used by representatives of both sides can only bring a civil war nearer by the hour. A number of leading Catholic churchmen in the Holy Land, including the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Monsignor Michel Sabah, were among those who signed the appeal. Philippa Hitchin is travelling with the delegation of Catholic bishops currently in the Holy Land. And she began by telling me more about the church's concerns over the current tense situation in the Palestinian territories.
Well, yes, Susie, everybody here, of course, all the religious leaders, and we have met a number of them during this trip. They're all extremely concerned about the violence and about the lack of political agreement there between Fatah and Hamas, because clearly until you get some kind of agreement between them, until there is a viable negotiating partner, if you like, on the Palestinian side, the Israeli government will continue saying that there is, of course, no point in any kind of negotiations, and therefore peace continues to become even more elusive. The religious leaders are doing whatever they can to try and influence their own communities. I know that the patriarch himself was one of the signatories to an appeal for peace, but overall I would say all the religious leaders here are doing what they can to try and work at grassroots level to prepare people. Until you have an atmosphere amongst people on the ground willing to discuss and to consider the other as a friend rather than as an enemy, it's very, very difficult for this to play out at leadership level. And of course, as you know here, mistrust and fear of the other remains extremely high.
I gather that Archbishop Jacour spoke in his address earlier about the situation of Christians in Israel, and in fact it was quite a wide-ranging speech. Were there any particularly interesting points that he brought up?
Well, yes, the bishop, he's the Greek Catholic Archbishop of Galilee and Palestine, Elias Jacour. He's an extremely charismatic figure. When he speaks, everybody sits down and listens, and he talked very, very strongly about the difficult situation for Christians here in Israel. He says very much that although people talk about peace here in this country, they're all in one way or another preparing for war. And he talks about the responsibility of the different religious leaders, as I was saying, to really try and combat this warlike mentality, to try and promote in every single way possible a kind of atmosphere of peace. The problem is, of course, is everybody sees themselves as a kind of minority, and he's talking about the need to overcome this mentality of minorities by struggling to build up a mixed community, struggling to integrate people, trying to work on what they share rather than what divides them. Now, he himself has been particularly involved in working in the field of education. You know, many years ago, about 25 years ago, he started up a school, what is now one of the largest religious schools in the country, bringing together to educate Christians, Muslims, Druze, and even a handful of Jewish children as well. He has a phrase, he says that peace begins over the desks in the classrooms of our schools, because it's only there that we can start writing the history of this region together. So, yes, a very powerful call for all those particularly working in the field of education, but anywhere where children, young children, can be influenced to grow up with a mentality of peace rather than a mentality of combating the enemy.
And talking about this mentality, I gather that opinion polls have shown that there is an alarming amount of prejudice amongst the young, both in Israel and even among Palestinians, when it comes to their views of the other.
These figures are really shocking, Susie. This was a recent poll published in the local press of hundreds of high school students right across Israel. And the results show that up to 75%, that's three quarters of all Jewish young people in Israel, believe that their Arab neighbors are ignorant, dirty, and violent. Now, on the other side of the fence, it's not much better, because There are slightly fewer Arab students who think that Jews are uncultured, uneducated, but a strong 64% of them still believe that Jews are violent by nature. And even more worryingly, less than half of the young Jewish students who were questioned for this poll said they had any interest in even speaking to an Arab boy or girl to find out what the situation actually is. Three quarters of the Arab youngsters who were interviewed said they would like to talk to their Jewish counterparts. But you can see that these extraordinarily high levels of prejudice in school-age children, we're talking here 15 to 18-year-olds, so people who within a generation will be in the leadership, in the influential positions in their country. If that kind of prejudice is still so prevalent, there really is a huge need for every possible effort at younger children's level to try and do something about it, to try and bring these people actually face to face. Because if you look at, for example, some of the actual projects that have been going on, we heard from the Maronite Archbishop of Haifa, Paul Nabil Sayah, and he talked about a project called the Encounter Program, which took place over 4 years, and it brought together students of different faiths from Jerusalem and also from London, bringing together Jews and Muslims and people of different faiths, Christians as well. And after this experience, almost all of them, we heard some of the testimonies from people who had written in at the end of the program, and they all said that when you meet somebody face-to-face, of course, your opinion completely changes, and you find out exactly what you have in common. It may be a football team, it may be your fashions, it may be your record collection, but you find that you have simple human things in common, and this overrides this terrible fear and mistrust with which clearly most of these children are being influenced.
Now, when you talked there about coming face to face, of course, the separation barrier now must be a major obstacle for greater contacts between Israelis and Palestinians to try and break down, as you say, these prejudices. What has been your feedback about the impact of the separation barrier, particularly having seen it for yourself and having had to cross over it?
Well, as you say, the separation barrier and the checkpoints all along the barrier, the heavily guarded checkpoints, are simply a disaster for this kind of reconciliation and healing that is so needed in this region. It's becoming harder and harder and harder by the day almost for Palestinians to cross over into Israel and back again, whether it's for work, whether it's for needing hospital treatment, whether it's for studying, whether it's for going to see their families. Whatever the reasons are, it is increasingly difficult for people to travel backwards and forwards across these checkpoints and across this separation barrier. That's quite apart from the issue of the barrier going up and cutting off vital Palestinian lands, families being divided as the wall goes through their communities, lands being taken away so that people have no means of earning a living. Your house is on one side, your land is on the other. If you can't farm your land and make a living, what do you do? So many of them are simply throwing up their hands and trying to emigrate, go abroad, trying to earn a living in another way. But all this, as you say, is having a very detrimental effect on people trying to bring these people together across the divide, trying to encourage this kind of face-to-face encounter, which at the end of the day is the only way of breaking down the mistrust and the fear.
Well, carrying on our theme of separation and barriers and divisions, I know that the bishops discussed the reunification of families. Can you fill us in a bit on this?
Yes, Susie, that's right. We had a very powerful presentation this morning from the director of an international centre for consultation, Wadi Abu Nassar, and he talks precisely about the impact that these difficult policies, political problems have on families, and in particular on families who have been separated because of these policies. It's difficult to understand, but if you take your case, my case, we went abroad, we fell in love with an Italian, we married and we moved to Italy to start our own families. And as Europeans, we have few difficulties in obtaining work permits. If we want citizenship, we apply. There's a certain amount of bureaucracy, but we can do that and we can start our families in a different country. Here, if an Arab Christian man falls in love, goes abroad, falls in love with a Palestinian, even from the West Bank or Gaza, let alone from any other country, there are enormous problems in obtaining the citizenship, the necessary documentation to be allowed to live here and to start a family in Israel. This is at the same time, of course, that the so-called Jewish law of return is encouraging Jews around the world to return to Israel. And there's a lot of debate, in fact, within the Israeli parliament between the so-called liberal sectors of the government who want anybody, even those with somewhat tenuous Jewish connections, to be allowed in under this law, and the ultra-Orthodox Jews who want only more devout families, people, to be allowed in order to try and combat the growing secularism here within the Jewish world, within Israel. And so at the heart of all this clear discrimination, of course, is the concern, some people are calling it paranoia, about the demographics in Israel. At the moment, the Arab population here is under 20%, but that, it seems, is growing very fast because of the high birth rates. Interestingly, actually, the ultra-Orthodox is the only birth rate which is higher than the Muslim birth rate. But the demographics are changing. There's a lot of concern that Arabs will eventually become a majority here in Israel. And that is the basis for this clear discrimination. There are many, many non-governmental organizations trying to press this issue at the level of the Israeli government, but without, it seems, very much success at the moment.
I was talking there to Philippa Hitchin in the Holy Land. As the violence and sectarian strife in Iraq worsens, more and more of the nation's population is fleeing elsewhere. The UNHCR says 1 in 8 of Iraqis have fled their homes, with up to 50,000 leaving each month. Around 2 million have sought refuge in other countries, mostly Syria, Jordan, Egypt and Lebanon. An even larger number are internally displaced within Iraq. Figures show that members of Iraq's small Christian community have been at the forefront of those fleeing the mayhem. A leading church official in Baghdad said in late December that the ubiquitous violence and insecurity plaguing Iraq had prompted half of the country's Christians to emigrate. In the following report, I've been trying to gauge the thoughts and fears of Iraq's Christian community, as well as find out more about the plight of Iraqis who have fled to neighbouring countries. The US is sending more troops into Iraq to try to stem what Pope Benedict has described as the appalling violence that is disfiguring with bloodshed this country. But can this move halt what many see as Iraq's seemingly unstoppable descent into an all-out civil war? And what about the people in Iraq? Do they have any hopes that the tide will turn in 2007? To find out more, I spoke to Monsignor Jean Sleiman, the Latin Archbishop of Baghdad. He says, not surprisingly, many Iraqis are beginning to despair about the never-ending cycle of violence.
I am afraid they have lost their hope in a better life. Really, violence began just after the war, but it's still increasing. And it's becoming very crazy, very primitive as the way of killing, of really pushing others to leave their homes, their families. And this situation is very fearful for all others, especially for Christians, because they are a very small minority now. The government cannot protect the population.
Do the Christians feel especially targeted?
In some quarters, in some cities, yes, as in some quarters of the capital.
Are they, for instance, scared to go to church and worship openly?
Until now, all churches were opened, but since 2 months, some churches are closed, and people cannot practice as before. And I knew some parishioners, for example, who are living in Dora, neighborhood of Baghdad. They prayed at home for Christmas, and they had the mass on television. They were afraid to go to church.
When you talk to Christians, when you meet Christians, do you sometimes meet
yes.
Christians who say they would like to leave if they could?
I will confess that all of them are saying we like to leave. they are not able to leave. All of them are not able to leave. But I have many surprises. They come and they told you tomorrow I will leave to Jordan, and then I don't know what country I can reach after, or to Syria. Yes, it's very frequent these last times.
As Archbishop Sleiman pointed out, the majority of the Iraqis fleeing the violence have gone to the neighbouring countries of Syria and Jordan, with smaller numbers ending up in Lebanon, Egypt, Turkey, or even further afield. According to the UNHCR, the current exodus of Iraqis is the largest long-term movement in the Middle East since the displacement of Palestinians after the creation of Israel in 1948. But, as I've been finding out, these Iraqi refugees usually face considerable economic hardship in their host countries and almost invariably have no legal status there. Father Dennis Como is an American missionary ministering to the community of Iraqi Chaldean Catholics in Jordan. He says the number of Iraqis fleeing to Jordan to escape the violence and insecurity has increased dramatically over the past year or so. And many of these exiles are Christians.
Yes, there are many more coming now, Muslims and Christians. I'm just dealing with the Chaldean Iraqis, and the priest who's in charge of them would say like there's maybe 10,000 of them here in Jordan. And the Muslims would be many, many more. You know, maybe 100,000 Iraqi Muslims. And then you have other Christian groups, too, that are all here. And it's Jordan is very good about welcoming them, but both Syria and Jordan don't really have any money to help Iraqis like, you know, maybe some other countries would have.
One Iraqi who moved to Jordan with his family soon after the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in 2003 is Mr. Mafour, a Chaldean Catholic. He told me that he and other Iraqi refugees living in Jordan believe the violence in their homeland is likely to get worse rather than better in the immediate future.
I think they are very sad because they are fled. They left their country. They left everything in Iraq.
Do they foresee any improvement in the violence?
No. Today is better than tomorrow. And tomorrow is better than after tomorrow. Because every day is coming worse and worse.
And how optimistic are you about the future of the Christian community in Iraq?
I think we can do nothing in Iraq. We lose Iraq.
And do all the other Iraqis think like you?
Everybody. Believe me, everybody.
Mafour's gloomy assessment about Iraq's future is confirmed by Father Dennis, who himself lived in Iraq back in the 1960s. He told me that all the Iraqi refugees he comes into contact with fear for the future of their homeland.
It's everybody is afraid, you know, of people doing crazy things just because they happen to be in that section of the city. It's just aimed at making chaos and making people go. And right now they're trying to get rid of the people with education. Doctors are, you know, people go up to doctors and they don't get up, we'll kill you and things like that. And that's for all the professions. And it's not limited to Christian or Muslim. It's just, it's like they want to drain the country of anybody who can help in the future.
The flight of Iraq's professional classes, particularly doctors and surgeons, is also noted with concern by Archbishop Sleiman.
The problem is surgeons who are leaving. Many doctors have been threatened or kidnapped or obliged to pay a ransom. So many of them, the best ones, left the country. And this is more dangerous than the lack of some medicines.
According to UN figures, there are an estimated 40,000 Iraqi refugees in Lebanon. And reports from there say there is a growing influx of Iraqis crossing the border to escape the chaos in their homeland. Isabel Sadeh works for Caritas Lebanon and is coordinator of a project that provides help to these Iraqi refugees.
Day after day, we are noticing that the number of new arrival families and individuals from Iraq is increasing.
Like in Jordan, the Iraqi refugees often suffer great hardship in Lebanon, owing to their illegal status. Sadeh says they mostly survive by doing poorly paid casual labouring jobs.
Actually, they don't have a legal status, but they try to work as daily workers in an illegal way because they have to deal with their situation and to find a solution for their families and their children.
But is there a lot of hardship, would you say, amongst these Iraqi refugees?
Yes, they are. They are really living in hard situations.
Sadeh says she is noticing more and more Iraqi Christians arriving in Lebanon of late.
Recently, we are noticing that the number of the Christian families is increasing. And among the families that Caritas is being assisted, they left because of the insecurity and others who have been really threatened and they are afraid. That's why they left.
How do they see the future of Iraq?
They are very afraid. And when we ask them if they want to return to Iraq, they tell us that if the situation is not going to be settled, definitely they don't wish to go back to Iraq.
Back in Baghdad, as we heard earlier, there is growing concern about the large numbers of Iraqi Christians leaving the country each month. Some Christian leaders have even predicted that if the exodus continues at its present rate, Iraq's tiny but ancient Christian community may soon become extinct. So does Archbishop Sleiman share that view?
Humanly, really, the hope is very difficult. I will have hope because I believe in God, but if we see what is happening, really, it's very difficult to think on the future. And we are really afraid to have only the poor and monuments. Many of our believers will have left this country.
Despite the gloomy outlook, Father Dennis says he believes a tiny remnant of the current Christian population in Iraq will stay.
I'm sure there'll always be at least a small community somewhere there when things settle down, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad right now, and other groups are leaving too. It's not just Christians. Anybody is leaving because they don't know why people, whoever, are just blowing up anything and everything. It's not even focusing on anybody. It's like, get them all out. We want to make a different country or something. That's what's sad, because it's a very cultured, educated country, and to have everybody uprooted, it's a loss for the country.
So it seems clear that whether Christian or Muslim, a growing number of Iraqis are no longer prepared to wait until Iraq emerges from its present nightmare and are fleeing from the land of their birth. But when it comes to Iraq's future, is there a glimmer of hope? And especially, is there an end in sight to the country's deadly conflict? Archbishop Sleiman in Baghdad gives his assessment.
Really, we are still in despair. We don't have signs of a real improvement in the situation. Maybe it will change, but until now, nobody can really be optimistic for the immediate future.
That was Monsignor Sleiman, the Latin Archbishop of Baghdad. And you also heard the voices of US priest Father Dennis Como in Jordan, Mr. Mafour, an Iraqi refugee in Iman, and Isabel Sadeh in Lebanon. Well, that's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. Don't forget, you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.